is the fourth interview with Molly Wexler and took place in her apartment. The previous interview, which was intended to be the last, had to be cut short as a result of noise from workmen in the apartment below. This interview was a continuation of filling in the gaps from previous tapes and was viewed as the final interview. We began with her describing things in several photographs of union involvement that she had found. The first was of a union class, the second was a victory picture, and the third a picnic in Griffith Park. Particularly with regard to the class, this brought out totally new information and of great relevance. There are many interesting observations in the tape, particularly her attitudes towards male leadership and the fact that women at that point thought it was natural and assumed that men had the stronger personalities and should be the leaders. The other very significant attitude discussed is her increase in confidence in herself and strength as a result of her activities in the union. This gave her confidence that she could support a family on her own and could be independent. This is especially significant as showing the function of union involvement in women's attitudes towards themselves. Of interest also is the discussion of the way in which she had job difficulties during the McCarthy period. These had been alluded to earlier, but on this tape she describes the specific sequence that occurred. The tape is only 45 minutes long, and it begins in mid-sentence looking at the pictures.
Then we were planning my tape.
You can tell me about this class again.
Yeah.
What it was and how they picked the people and everything.
Yeah. The people, they met quite a few, forelady in the shop. And they asked her if they can come in, just two men, I remember their names too, I think, to the shop. So she says, yes, you come in lunch hour. So when they came in lunch hour, they told the class, few of the people, that they would like to see some of us. They couldn't talk about a union in their shop. They'd like to see some of us about education. Never mentioned union. We couldn't go to schools, cost money, everything. And they give us a name, our address. So from our place, four of us went, including me, and from other places, a few. When we got together, they began to tell us that in New York is already a union, and it's called Local 22, the dressmakers. Clockmakers, a different number. But in Chicago, they would like to help us out and make us learn a little bit more about unionism. Would anybody like to be to a class? And raise your hand. So, not a too big a crowd. This that I showed you, the pictures from other shops too. From my place, just three of us. I think out of three. One man, two women, including me. I agreed, and then they came, and they had a room, not in a private, in a sort of a, like a temple next door there. And the man was telling us what unionism would do for us. Some of us knew already from Europe, including me, I knew quite a little bit, but it was nice to know how America works in it, and what it goes, and what we're allowed to do, and that we shouldn't discuss it ever in the shop. A shop is for work only. Otherwise, they have a legitimate right to send us out, not to keep us. He explained us how to behave, and we went for quite a while. I don't remember exactly how long, but quite a while we went to that class. I think about a year or a little over.
Now, was the idea that these might be the leadership of the union? Or what?
Whatever capacity that they'll involve us, either in the union or in the shop. Every factory has to have a group of people that can function, and so that was the idea.
Now, when was this? Was this before the
day before. Well, it was no union yet. I was arrested and the union was already built up.
So it was that right after you first came to Chicago?
Well, it was about, I would say about 2 years after I came to Chicago, around that. It was close to 1917.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not
now, or is it?
It doesn't look like
sales, they go.
But it was mainly men.
Yeah, that's right.
And what kinds of things did they teach them?
Just as I said, how to behave, that things should be legal, and there should be no any reason for being fired from the jobs. Because in those days, especially when you haven't got a union to protect you, if you're fired, you can't get up to another place. So they taught us how logically to find out what is better for us and how to explain to the people what would be better for them. They have to, the most important thing wasn't so much wages or shorter hours, we worked awful long hours, but security of job. That we should learn how to be able to keep. Because there's so many refugees that came that they were glad to work for less, no matter what. To buy bread is all right because they were starving anyway. So that's what they taught us, how to approach to these people, and gentle and knowledgeable. And some of us really almost graduated, as you said, one evening. So that's when, after this class, I worked in Alpha Pinkata, I became the first child lady.
Now, after the class then, is when the organizing began.
Began in real form. But I mean real. Yeah. And then some of the shops were busy. They saw to it that it would be the height of a season. Then they can't just let people go. Even if other people wanted to work for less, it was still better to have people that already spoke a little bit English and already had the knowledge of American way of working. There's quite a difference between the European and the American way. So they wanted us. So it didn't take too long that some of the shops became unionized immediately. And then they became unionized, then they involved us still more in helping out the shops that aren't unionized. And they helped. And the union shops couldn't fire us for that because they signed an agreement, so they want other people too. It worked very nicely.
Now, how long did that class last then?
It lasted a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I
would say by 1919 that it became really didn't need classes anymore. If anybody was a little bit estranged with language or whatever, came to us that we know a little bit more already.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to the class the whole time?
Yes.
Just for a
year? No, I went over a year.
Hmm.
That's right.
Did the other people who were in the class, the other women, become active organizers?
Yes, that's still that I showed you the picture where we spent the whole
line. This picture, this was in 1922.
Yes, that was when this type was won.
Okay, now, tell
the local was already officially
okay,
recognized.
Which strike was this?
The Brezhnevkers.
This was for the whole
city?
It's
not in the magazine there. Yeah, the whole, only Brezhnevkers, the entire little place. That's when the local took on their full name.
Okay.
And President Schlesinger came, and the Vice President Hoffman came, and still the picture in the Union, if you'll ever be in Chicago, you'll go up in the Civil Union, you'll see them in a large form. They have the history of that thing.
Mm.
I'm there.
Okay, so this, do you remember, can you tell me, like how that strike began and everything?
Well, it began like most other places. The unions already forms, already the office, and they have officials, and they elect, and they call up, make an appointment to each factory that they have signed up from us, wherever we work, and they come up and they talk in the office, which we don't stand by, just privately. And they explain them how important it is for them too, because, you know, they show on their good sides, which is true. You know, you have a right, a union shop has a right to demand certain things from the workers that they have to qualify for. And so some of them, as I said, were quite easy to get along. And that's things it over, they call it over. And then some of them sang. And those that didn't sing, the majority didn't. I said some because Chicago is a very big city, and there was already, I can't remember how many factories. So they took them on strike.
Now, did that strike just stopped. It didn't really succeed, did it?
No. But it didn't give up. It never gave up. Because to each something is a certain success. I wouldn't say that the majority then did, but some of the factories signed. Then they continued, and then one more or two more or something like that. Then they began to take the people from the non-union factories into the union factories that got busier, so they were forced to sign it up or else go out of business. And that took a little while, but they the whole city became unionized.
And it was after that that it was called the local to call its name?
100. It still is.
But up until then, it hadn't been like
just
started.
Just unionized, that's what they call it. But then they give it a name and that's it.
Now these young women were all in that local?
Yes, all of them. From different factories, Quite a number of them worked with me together, but then from the three and four, there are quite a number of them. All the active, as you call them, the real active girls.
So they were like the chair ladies and the...
Chair ladies, the price committees, committees that settled problems. It's not good with the price committee. A person doesn't behave well or, you know, still whatever happens. And the union shop has to take care of it. The boss has to let him know before he fires the reason. And this is called, And then there's the election objection committee, and that's in the union from each shop that then officials get elected. He has to approve this is approved.
That's for
the union appeals to each factory, each union factory, wherever they apply, they don't see. Yeah, wait for a while. That's just in the election time.
Now that you did though in L.A.
Yeah, there too.
Oh.
Over there and here. Yeah. Over there it just started.
Now, the picture of Griffith Park, that was in L.A. then?
Yes.
And that was after you first got here?
No, I was here for quite a few years. It was in the early 40s.
And this was when the local was not quite strong yet?
It was fairly good, but not completed the way it became later. Yeah, so they had a very nice picnic.
It wasn't for an organizing drive,
though,
or anything?
I would say in a way for being together, getting acquainted to know how to reach each other in problems and things. So we make a holiday of it so it's easier for people to want to come. It was on a Sunday.
The couple of things that I wanted to ask you about were some later things. First, when he came to L.A., he went to Patricia Perkins.
Yes.
And then?
830 South Broadway. Right across the street of the May Company on the fourth floor. Exactly.
And then?
And it wasn't a union shop.
That was not
you. No, it was not a union shop.
And you didn't succeed in making that union
shop? Oh, yes. You succeeded.
And then she died?
He died driving the car. And Connor Fairfax and Wilshire Boulder.
And then two of the cutters or someone took it over?
Yes, they had cutters to cut over.
And then, but you didn't stay there?
Not too long. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't as good when Maury was alive. We called him Maury because he was a very friendly. But I stayed on because I couldn't afford to run around for jobs, but people to support. We were poor to be supported. So one day I met a girl that I also knew from Chicago, Yuba. And she says, Molly, you know, I was looking for you. I'll never forget it. On the bus. I was looking for you. I didn't know your address or anything, but I used to see you. She says, you know, do you have Adrian? I said, no, I didn't. He says, Adrian is Janet Gaynor's husband. She's the star of her, I heard. and he was just brought from Paris, and he's opening up a place, and he wants the best workers that anybody knows of to get. Come up and see if you can work there. Where is it? She says, I'm 8 in Maple Avenue. Maple Avenue is past Los Angeles Street, on the 8th floor. Fine. I said, I'll come up after work, whatever I can. I'm working now. She says, come up. So a few days later, I went up, you know, met the foreman, a Jewish man, New York, and he asked me my experiences and things, and I told him, and he says, so why don't you come up to work Monday? I says, but I have to quit my job, and what if I don't make it good? He says, no, just say a lie. I'll never forget good money's made. So tell him that one of your children or whatever it is, and we'll try it out, but I have a feeling he'll work here. So I came up Monday, and sure enough.
So you went right from the Patricia Perkins, and then they took over
from Patricia Perkins to the two men that took it over for a little while, and then Fabian.
And
in Adrian's, I came up was about 1940 about, and I worked until 1953.
Now, when you first got to Adrian's, was it unionized when you first got there?
No, he just opened it up, and he didn't see, because he had a studio, and he was a designer. He didn't have anything to do with business, a great designer. I have his picture, too. I'll show you sometimes, his picture in Janet Gaynor. I have it cut out. But he gave it over to a manager, Fitzgerald, and Goodman, that worked. Yet, and one floor was the clock, and one up floor was the dressing, that they should tell us that whatever will demand will be settled as soon as we feel that we are established, and that these are the people that he wants, and that's a promise. So the foreman told us, he says, if all of you will qualify, and the thing will take care of itself the way it looks like it, and believe me, it was a billionaire. You're going to get the best pay in the entire United States, which is true, because he says when Adrian says something, he means it. But give a chance to establish. So we established it. We started out, and I don't exactly remember how many months, but it didn't take too long. And the union sent up a few people, and they called us, a few of us from the factory, into Adrian, and he says, by all means, I'll sign. These people will stay with me as long as this place will last. And that's what it was.
Now,
and we made twice as much as anybody else. Exactly without exaggeration. Imagine in those years to average $5,000 a year. That's what I began to do. That's why I get a social security check. Good. Whatever price he would tell, if he wasn't there and the manager would resign or something, then they wouldn't take the manager's work. Later on, he would come for an interview and he would say, I can't dispute their prizes. Nobody can do the things the way they do. That's his word. That's it.
Now, were you the chair lady, the first chair lady?
Not in Adrian's. No. In Adrian's, I was the prize committee. Yeah, chair ladies, but I was still.
But you were.
I was in the prize committee.
Were you in the prize committee most of the time then?
Quite a bit of the time, yes. Not as much as others, because not everybody had the obligations that I had. Sometimes a prize committee has to stay longer, has to be more involved, and I, not that I resigned, but I explained, you know, after all, you have two young children, and all kinds of problems and things come up. But I functioned, but not as much as other people.
Now, then, so you stayed with Adrian until he died. Then, I wasn't clear. Oh, then is when the trouble with the McCarthy period began.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, if you can tell me in more detail some of those problems, like how they would go about making sure that you didn't have a job or that you would lose a job.
If we were too lefty.
What would happen?
Now, the foreman, usually a foreman in a shop, has to be I don't know what, it couldn't be a worker. He works, but he's not a worker. He's in the firm, and he's against the demands of workers, otherwise he couldn't function as a foreman. So this McCarthy period people let the foreman know everywhere that should they find out that somebody that they don't want, that gives them trouble, that demands too much, and if they can prove certain less these things, the person will be taken off immediately. And sure enough, we didn't have anything to hide, we weren't communists or anything, but we were workers that demanded the rights for other workers too, and for other people. And if something came up in the world, we stood by with it, that's it. And the former reported a lot. And the rest of the neighboring closed up, they couldn't get into a union shop.
Now what would happen? Would the union call the company and say, these people are you better work?
I wouldn't say everybody in the union, but some.
So, like the union would call a shop and say, so-and-so has, may be communist or something.
You're right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. That's right. And some of us began to run, not by ourselves, but we were elected to big membership meetings for some function in the union directly, not in the shops. They found ways in means of, like I was running for the executive board. Not I wouldn't know myself, because as I said, I was very busy, but the workers insisted, with my little more experience, maybe I was a little older than some of them, so I accepted it. And I prepared myself, what my functions will be by now and everything. And he starts to ask me, what is the conference in Yalta going on with Roosevelt and with from the England, Churchill and everything. And I looked at him, I said, I can prepare myself for a world political situation. See, it was a good excuse not to accept me. And they found out people that they want in there, that go their way and do their things.
So what after Adrian's, where did you go first?
After Adrian's, I went up to the union. I was still paying the dues and everything. And not myself, a great big group of us. And we pay a price for it still. I'll mention it and you may as well know it. Quite a number of us went up, and naturally we knew that Adrian died, and we felt very bad about it because he left a bill. His name should not be mentioned anymore in our factory. And we want the jobs. And legally, they have to sign us up. And they have to give us, if we go, they sign us up and they have to let us know when there are vacancies on this. But if we find out by ourselves union shop vacancies, they have to come up in the union and report, and they have to give you a little bit of a yellow card with a number that they recommend you to that place. And they gave it to us. And I came up in a place, it was 722 South Los Angeles Street. It's a good class of work. Came up and I gave my background, I worked in Adrian's. Fine, we need you, we want you. In fact, one of their pattern makers was one of the girls, women that worked in Adrian's. And she came up and she recommended me because I used to help her make the samples or something. And that was on a Thursday. Yeah, I remember it exactly. And they said, well, you come Monday. Come to work. You'll find, you qualify. You took the little car, they marked it on. That's all. At the end of the day, Friday afternoon, late afternoon, I get a telephone call from that place. The girl in the office says, I'm Mama Dexler, I'm sorry, one of our people came back and they can't, you can't come up. I thought it was true. Yeah, I felt bad because I wanted to work there. In another place it happened like that. Then I met some of the people that we were looking and they all told me the same experiences. What happened? Then they accepted us, they called up to the office of the union and reported, Mama Dexler was here, sent by you, and they sent us somebody else. That's exactly what happened right here in Local 94. So naturally, how long can you continue like that? Some people continued a little bit longer, but I couldn't. I thought with my capacity, I'll go working in Los Angeles. I looked up the high class places in Beverly Hills, like Stella's Boutique, and 55 Wilshire Boulevard near Rodeo Drive, very exclusive little place. She accepted me, it's going to have to be a union. It's a store, but she accepted orders. She was a designer. And she paid me very well. I worked there for a long time, something different, and she went out of business, she went private, and I began to come to the union. You know, I kept paying dues. Paid, didn't fall out of the union. I paid dues until 1957. And Adrian died in 1953. All these years that I didn't work in a union shop, I paid the dues, and besides dues, they have a what do you call this, an insurance policy. $1,000, if a person dies, the family can take $1,000 for the expenses. I paid that too. Paid into that too. I had a reason for telling it. It's a very legitimate reason. And I went out from her, and I went to another place on there, Irene's in Culver City and everywhere. Couldn't get a union shop.
Still, even in that, this was 1957 now.
Yeah. Nothing. Couldn't get. So, these years that I didn't work in union shops cut off the union pension. Even if you paid your dues, I didn't know that. Then I retired, I applied for union pension, and they looked up and said, you missed so many years not working in union shops. That's it. And I can't tell you how many of us from Adrian's that are not getting a pension. And we were the most active workers. I can name the names right there now. It's known, it's not a secret.
And these were all people who were considered to be left.
Yes, yes. And of course they include a few more. It shouldn't look so obvious. You know, I can give you material for that. You know, I applied, I wrote a letter, my daughter came, and she was very angry because as a child she knew how much I was involved. In the night time, they used to send me, people are afraid that I'm not a fearful type, to scabs, to try to, in here, try to discourage them from going there and help them get in another jobs and everything, and the children wouldn't like it to go there. But I had to do it, I explained it. So then she wrote a letter to President Dubinsky in, by the way, he and I come from the same city from Europe, and she explained and the dates and everything of my whatever I went through and everything, and he answered that everything is correct. Looked at the record there that he sent from Chicago yet and everywhere, but I missed this particular number of years, and that's according to the law of the union, which is a law, but I couldn't prove that they worked against me, that the law should be able to, that I couldn't prove. But some of my friends gave it over to lawyers, and even to the district attorney. It's a law. If you haven't got so many years, they made a certain number of years in order to pay pension, they get $75 a month, now they're fighting for $100 a month. 75 is the, everybody gets minimum. Now they're fighting for $100 a month, and they may get it too. You don't get one penny.
And there's, but the lawyers,
that's the truth,
couldn't help them.
No,
in terms of the union,
no,
was involved.
Because you couldn't prove. How could I prove? We found it out between ourselves. But the lawyers look at you like you're making up stories, especially the way they describe as the kind of types we are and why. That's all. Mm. There were times that we didn't pressure too much. Also for reasons that we didn't want him to go into all kinds of details and things. You know, when you begin to look, you build up things. So I personally gave up completely. I tried quite a number of times. I was in New York and visits, and I went into the main office there, and they wrote to Chicago, and Chicago sent in. Chicago's office was very much for me. They don't know the other people. Because, the, as I said, the pictures there since 1916, 17, everything, didn't help one bit. I'm not getting it.
Now, then in 1957, when did you go to...
I fell out of Adrian's the end of 1952.
And then you worked in the shops in Beverly Hills?
In Beverly Hills, not in shops, in stores mostly, but alteration and feeding and something new and whatever.
And that was for how long?
Well, that was until 1960.
And then 1960.
1960, then. Yes, that's right.
Now, did you continue your affiliation with the union? You said in 1957
you started. Yeah, that's something else. No, then they, in 1957, around 1958, I gave up paying dues. Because it's another thing, the union has sort of a disability in program, you know what that means. The state has it and the union has it. And I had a very big, something happened to me that turned out to be good. I had a detached retina in my left eye. And they found out that time that it was a very difficult thing. So I already belonged to the Permanente, which is very lucky. And my daughter applied for disability. And the state immediately, there you get the unemployment. Instead, unemployment is when you don't work, disability is when you're physically incapacitated. She applied and the state started sending immediately for hospitalization and everything. And then she applied in the union because I was still paying. That was the end of 1956. And they looked up and they said, no, I was paying dues. And they said, no, these are only for people that work in union shops. And they have a great manual. So naturally she said, you might as well stop. Things. What do you think dues? So everything remained there. My dues that I paid, my insurance policy that I paid that for 7 years, and that fell off completely. So I worked in by 19 and then I went to Helen Rose. And yes, so then I worked in Helen Rose and the union decided that they want to make a union shop out of it. They came sent to my house, not only me alone, but most of them, to help, I should help him organize the shop. After all this had been through already. And I did. And they even paid me, while I was on strike, you get a certain insurance, unemployment from them. They paid me. But then the shop, the strike was lost and everything. I gave this as an instance for my pension. Nothing good.
Did you, when they came to you to help with the organizing the Helen Rose,
yeah,
did you tell them how you felt about the union or anything?
No,
then?
Not a thing. New people that worked there, they came. Their claim was justified to me because I was always for unionism. And I knew that I can help, and I thought to myself, maybe that, besides helping out everything, maybe I'll help myself too. If I'll help it make it a union shop, there has to be exceptions. And I talked to God with some people that have experience, and they said, by all means. So, the strike got lost, and I fell out from there. And even the state, but with the state I won the case, and with the union, no.
So then after that strike was lost, you continued working though after
that? After that I picked up and I went away with a group to Europe. That was my big trip because I was very disappointed in so many things that I have a way, I think, I hope it less, for instead of sitting and crying or something, I do something else and get away from it. Can't be helped. That's all. Traveled and then I came back. Took me quite a while, I traveled around quite a bit. I came back and I began to look for little side jobs that I found. There's nothing to do with unions, it's usually stores, alterations.
When did you start collecting your Social Security?
1961.
Oh, I see. So right after the Helen Rose thing,
yeah,
started.
Yeah.
So that your work since then was just picking up?
Yeah, picking up. Part-time jobs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
Now, what do you feel, what do you think about the position of women in the movement, in the trade union movement? Do you think that they're accepted more now and there's more leadership?
Yes,
women?
Very much. Very much. No comparison. They really are.
You could see the change from when you were.
Absolutely.
Began.
Big change, yes.
What kinds of things happened, do you think?
Well, everybody realized that you're functioning the right way, so there it is. Recognized like in many other places. Yeah. There's not a question to elect somebody because it's a man. Also, if somebody is capable, recommend it. They can happen.
So did things like the local executive boards get more women on them then? Because when you were in Chicago, there weren't.
Oh, no. Now for years that women are accepted. They undertake, cannot be accepted. We weren't sure with ourselves. Now we are. We function with little things.
Do you feel that there have been changes, like since you first came, do you think that women have changed in terms of how they, their respect for themselves?
A lot. Very much.
What kinds of ways do you think what do you think happened exactly?
All these that they live through. Now all these that I would never think of being a floor lady or a chair lady or whatever. But after I lived through all these things, and after I was arrested in such early years, I found out that I can function. There was nothing different for being a man or a woman, even if you have to give birth to a child. So what? You take off some months and you get somebody to take care of you afterwards, you go to work. And that gives you strength and the understanding that it has nothing to do with sexes. It has to do with your willpower, your strength of character, and your understanding the importance of the functions that you're going into. And that's what we learn.
So the unions really, your activity in the union really gave you confidence.
Builder, correct.
So that as a woman you
correct, could. Yes, very much so. And you find out that you can make a living for a family. Not only the man makes that was a big experience.
Did you feel like before your husband left or not until he
not quite like that. Yeah. Then I realized that I can stand by them again. And actually telling it to other women and other women telling their experiences to you builds up understanding. And sometimes people come over and they say, why don't you come over to my house? Let's all get together and discuss things. People that haven't got yet the confidence in themselves used to call us up, we talk to them, and that's how one grows after another.
How many of the women do you think were supporting themselves in families that you were working with? Was it true of most of them?
Quite a number of them, yeah. Quite a number.
But until you left your husband, you felt you could always depend on him if necessary.
Yeah.
And it wasn't
until he left the States.
Yeah.
That one can depend on anything.
But that's the time when you realize that you really could make it on your own.
Well, when I left Chicago, I had a feeling that I'll have to make it most of my own. I thought maybe a little bit he'll help, but many people didn't. So.
So it must have been a pretty frightening experience coming out here and not knowing anybody and not knowing if you could.
Well, I'll tell you some wise saying from a very dear friend of mine who's not alive anymore. Husband of a friend of mine, the little picture that I gave you, the three of us. He was an attorney, Joe Dugovic, and we lived next door to each other. And they were the first ones that I was telling that I'm planning to go to California. And I told them a few reasons. One important reason was that I had hay fever in Chicago, and it started to be asthmatic a little bit, and it was expensive to take the shots, and I wanted to try out the climate, and the second was the marriage was not working out right. So Joe looked at me and he says, so what is your question? You have money to go? I said, well, I'll sell. I had a baby grand piano that I bought for the children, paying that I wanted them to study. Well, so what is your question? I said, my question is, do you think that maybe I'm taking too much of a risk? Not for myself, but you have to be responsible for that. He says, Molly, you know something? I know you for quite a number of years. Weak people, weak characters, when they face problems in life, get weaker and fall by the wayside. People that have strong characters and have decisions get stronger with the struggling and with the challenges that they face. And you'll be one of them. I guarantee you. It didn't quite look too literary or something, But he says, I want you to think about it and always remember that you will make it no matter what. That's the feeling I have. See, I'm not making you any compliments or anything. This is it. I get that from them. And you know that I thought about it many, many times. And not only did I think about it, but I would share it with people that needed it. And I wouldn't say it to them that this is my wisdom. I took it from Joe Dubovic.
So when you came out here then, once you got out here, were a lot of your associations with other women
not yet
in the same position that you were?
No, I didn't know anybody. There was no local yet. Mm-hmm. Okay. I just had one friend that I still have that's not in the dressmaking or anything. They had a business on Western Avenue. I knew her from Chicago yet. And I wrote to her, and she got a little cabin by the ocean there for me, signed up with it. So when I asked her what I should do when I came in on a Saturday noon, she met us by the train. There was no plane in our lives yet. And she says, well, I was thinking about it, and there is a costume designing in the studios that I know a few people that come into our business. So I told them, and they told me that you should come up there. Came in Saturday noon, and Monday morning I was there, in the city from the horses. And they took me, and they started maybe $6 a day, every day. $6 a day. It wasn't bad that time. It was nice. And I worked. And then I got acquainted with a few people in there, and they told me, two girls told me, we are still friends, they're in New York now, that they think that they better go to a factory. It's the studios are certain seasons. In a factory it's also seasons, but a little bit longer. So I said, how do you get it? I said, well, look in the paper, we'll see. And I worked in the studio there for a couple of months, and then on Sunday morning I looked in the paper, and I saw that Patricia Perkins on 8:30 South Broadway makes evening dresses only. And she wants people that are qualified for just evening dresses. I didn't even know exactly what is the difference. I found out later there is a difference in it. And so I didn't call up. I got up Monday morning and I told them that then I thought then I'll get the job. I'll call them up and if I don't, I'll go back to work there, because in the studio you don't come 8 o'clock to work. In the factories, we used to be there 8 o'clock. I'd be there 8 o'clock. And sure enough, the man that died later, he recognized me and I recognized him. He was a manager in a store on 71st Street, where I worked just 2 doors away. And he used to see me go on the South Shore Walk. He says, go ahead, sit down and get so, that's you. And I put him to his back. That was 1935, June 28th. I applied there. I bet you.
Yeah.
That was Maury Fine.
Did you, comparing yourself to, of course, most of the women you knew, though, were women from the trade union. Because I was wondering if looking around at other women and other women with whom you were familiar, if they had less confidence in themselves because they didn't have that.
Some do, some don't, yeah. Some remain even with less confidence no matter how much experience they have. You know, yeah, people are, and psychologically. And some people build up, you know. As my friend Joe said, and this is it. You helped me my not being afraid of anything, I still am not. Got to do something, then go ahead and do it. If I feel that it has a purpose of some kind. That's it. It's not a question, you need to leave me up showing off that I know better, I act better, and I don't know better, and I don't act better. It's just that I must have the reason of building up the willpower of facing things, and my children acknowledge it too. In fact, sometimes they used to say to me that they got it because of that.
Looking back over it all, do you have any regrets about any of the activities or any of the ways in which you handle things?
No. That's not fair. I do think sometimes maybe shouldn't go away from Chicago or something. You know, sometimes it occurs to you that you're dissatisfied with situations that didn't fulfill themselves in more than one way that you had dreams of. But not seriously.
But you were always happy with the work you did in the union.
Yeah, I liked the work I did in the union. I liked my work as dressmaking too, because it has a sort of a creativeness. I developed in it. Not just sewing, but it has something in it. Yeah.
And despite your experiences here in the prefecture, you're not disillusioned about the trade union movement, about all of that?
A little bit, yes. I didn't expect that they should. I thought that the main object in a union, the biggest object, maybe some unions are, maybe some aren't, but I thought that